If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I'm a broker that wants to teach people about why it's important to know about site selection and demographics and the mindset of major retailers. That there's way more to this than just slapping a cap rate on a property.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dan Lukowitz is a seasoned real estate veteran with over a decade of experience in many facets of the real estate industry. Dan is also a former business development executive for Amazon in Detroit, Michigan. Currently, Dan is director of investment sales at Encore Real Estate Investment Services and specializes in shopping centers, medical office buildings, industrial fulfillment centers, and automotive repair and parts stores. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Man, this is great. It's an honor to have you on. I'm excited to dive in today and really just hear your perspective from a broker's perspective, kind of how we as investors interact with you guys. How do we make these transactions smooth? What things do you look for when you're interacting with investors? I kind of love just a deep dive on how you perceive us and how really just how to make this the best relationship possible. So can you kind of tell us, you know, a little bit about your experience, where you started, where you are now, where you're going, and, you know, dig into all that if you can.
Yeah. So my name's Dan Lukowitz. I'm a net lease investment sales broker, which means that I broker transactions between buyers and sellers of net leased assets. So typically your major national tenants, your Walgreens, Rite Aid, CVS's, Starbucks, you know, Big O Tires, Tire Kingdom, McDonald's, Burger King, et cetera, et cetera. Do a lot of single tenant net lease deals, but also I sell a lot of shopping centers. And, you know, typically I happen to love sellers and I hustle and chase listings. I know that we interacted on some posts from Brian Briscoe. I typically don't do a lot of buyer rep unless the buyers come to me by way of referral or unless they're an existing client or someone that I'm already in a transaction with.
Sure.
I got into this industry after, you know, 10 plus years of real estate investing. I personally have purchased, renovated, and resold quite a few single family properties over the last 10 years, and also some multifamily. And I have a background as sales. I led a sales team at a title insurance agency to kind of understand the title process more about 10 years ago. Business development executive at Amazon in Detroit, which was a lot of fun, and jumped into full time net lease brokerage back in about 2017, 2018, got rid of the W-2, probably amongst the best days of my life. And I can, you know, proudly say that I'm self-employed and loving every second of it.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. Let's circle back to your comment on the, you represent mostly sellers. So yeah. How does that work when you said you represent sellers, but you deal mostly with the net lease? Are they selling the assets? Are they selling, but you're a leaser. Yeah. You do mostly leasing. So but are you talking about leasing or actually selling the assets?
No, so I'm not a leasing broker. I'm a net lease investment sales broker, which means that I broker the real estate transactions. I will make referrals to like an M&A broker, a merger and acquisitions broker for the actual businesses. But the closest I get to dealing with businesses are in what's called a sale leaseback transaction, which is where you've got an owner operator, let's say of a Burger King, who wants to sell the building but maintain the operation. So I'll find him a new buyer that will then own the building, and the asset will then be leased. The space will be leased from the new owner. So I'm an investment sales broker who is exclusively dealing with the real estate.
Gotcha. Cool. That's very cool. So you're out looking for people. You're out hustling for leads to actually sell that real estate to then investors. So kind of walk us through that process then. What does that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, I guess I'll give away all the secrets, right? So the way that
you don't have to, but I guess.
No, I'm happy to. My motto is add value, everything else follows. So if I can provide some value to people, you know, good will come my way as well. So basically the way that it works is that, you know, I have a specific list of tenants that I target based on, you know, who in the marketplace is buying what. And I create these proprietary databases of owners of property. I then send out email drip campaigns through a proprietary system that I created. And I have basically a cadence. I will make calls. Typically, my first few years of doing this, I was making between 250 and 300 calls a week. And if I hit 1,000 calls in a month, I would typically get one listing. Now, once I get a listing, right, I then will create a new database of potential buyers for that asset. So for example, I just listed 4 Burger Kings in Montana about 2.5 weeks ago. So I now have, thankfully, a team that works for me doing my databasing. I've got a junior broker. I've got some interns. So I put one of my junior brokers on a task of working with my team in the Philippines that does my databasing now. And we created a list of all of the Burger King owners in the entire country. And then we sent out an email blast saying, hey, just listed these 4 properties. Would love to talk to you more. I know that you own this property at this location, et cetera, et cetera. And that provided us a stream of potential buyers. And at the same time, it filled up another bucket. And that bucket is a list of potential sellers, right? Because every buyer is a potential seller and every seller is a potential buyer. So at that point, you know, we received a bunch of offers, properties, you know, getting letters of intent at full asking price. Now we're in a bit of a bidding war, which is kind of fun for me at least and for my sellers, right?
Sure.
Maybe not so much for the buyers. And through that process, now I'm getting more listings. So, you know, at the same time, I have a $12.5 million medical office building in Iowa I'm selling. And I did the same thing. Once I got that listing, I created a database of the owners of the other 419 assets with the same lease guarantor. So it's constantly filling buckets and making matches and knowing who to talk to. And at this point in my career, I have very strong relationships with the real estate investment trust acquisition managers, with hedge fund managers, with private equity guys. So I know what they're looking for. And now I've been able to tailor my search and my employees' search for property that checks those boxes so that we can slam deals much easier.
Right, man, that's awesome. That's a very efficient way, it seems, of keeping your lead pipeline full. So let's focus then in not so much on the buyer side, but more on the seller side. As you go to sell assets like this, what are things that sellers can be doing? You know, especially in the, because I'm assuming these are all basically net or triple net leases, because you're like Burger King doesn't own the underlying real estate. They're just selling the real estate and somebody's basically buying an annuity because they don't, you know, they're not operating.
Well said. Yep.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So cool. So what does a seller of real estate like that, like what are some things that they can do to make these transactions easier?
Well, I just got off the phone about 5 minutes ago with a seller of mine who's in Las Vegas. He's got a property here in Michigan. I'm vying for that listing. And we had a long discussion about some of the challenges he's facing with another broker, actually the brokerage house I formerly worked at. And very interesting conversations. But what he can do is educate himself. And that's why I don't look at myself as a broker. I look at myself as an advisor, right? Because same thing, like I said before, if I'm providing value to people, then I'll get their business, right? If I'm the best at what I do, I'll get their business. If I'm advising them, Sam, then I will ultimately be able for them or to help them as a buyer's rep. So my advice to him was, hey, let's look at what's going on in the marketplace. The cap rates on quick service restaurant with the drive-through are going down, you know, which is amazing. Mm. We're in the middle of a pandemic. If you look at sales, they're going up. If you look at, you know, demographics, they're changing all across the country. He had a point, well, hey, there's a vaccine around the corner, so maybe I'll wait. And my point was, well, hold on 1 second. We had billions of dollars of investor capital that goes into net lease every year, right? That's spread across multi-tenant shopping centers and hospitals and dialysis and quick service restaurant, casual dining, you know, industrial, et cetera, et cetera. Well, once the pandemic hit, everything contracted. And a similar amount of capital was now going into only what we call essential retailers, right? So your tire stores and your quick service restaurant and some of your other essential medical. So now you can capitalize on the fact, since he knows that, since I informed him, I advised him, he can capitalize on the fact that, wait a minute, maybe it is better to list now when cap rates are at an all-time high and sales are through the roof and all that investor capital is constricted into this narrow band of essential retail. So as a seller, I think that it's important to keep your eyes and ears open, right? And to not assume that you know everything. Now, there's a lot of sophisticated sellers out there, but I like to think that I'm a sophisticated broker, which means that, you know, 18 hours a day, I'm seeing deals, right? 18 hours a day, I'm talking to people. I'm on podcasts. I have my own show about commercial real estate. So I have value, right? As a seller and as an investor, I think that one of the most important things that a person can do is to have an open mind and to seek out knowledge and information and a good, strong, valuable team and a strong network. So that's really, you know, important for people not to lose sight of.
Right. And why does somebody turn loose? I mean, yes, I think what you meant to say was that cap rates have come down and obviously asset prices have increased, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So why would, I mean, other than just maybe cashing out, I mean, the reason for buying these assets, of course, is that they're easy to maintain, you know, easy to manage, and you're basically just getting an ACH in your account every month. So why would someone cash out? Why do they even want to sell?
Well, great question. I mean, if you look at it right now, I mean, it's all about, you know, spreads. You know, some of these properties were purchased a few years ago at a 6.5 cap or a 7 cap, right? And maybe since then they've had a rental increase, right? So there's more cash flow. And now I can sell them at a 5.25 cap or a 5.5 cap. And further, a lot of times what happens is people will do what's called a blend and extend. Is that something you're familiar with?
It's not. Please explain.
So I'll give you a great example. I've got a property in Ohio. It's a Walgreens. And it was originally a 20-year property, 20-year lease. My client built the whole shopping center, built the Walgreens, built his office, built a Cleveland Clinic, et cetera, put a 20-year financing on it. Pretty much now it's almost fully depreciated and he wants to sell, right? There's only 14 months left until the lease expires and we have no idea if Walgreens is gonna extend. Well, right. I happen to know that Walgreens would be willing to extend the lease for 5 or 10 years in exchange for a rental reduction. So the blend is you're blending the rent and you're extending the lease. So this deal right now is worth like a 9 or a 10 cap on $290,000 of income. So it's worth maybe 2.9 million, okay?
Sure.
Walgreens will drop the rent to like 250, let's say, in exchange for, let's say, a 10-year lease. And now it's at a 775 cap or something like that. So 250,000, let me pull out my calculator here. I'm a broker, right? Which means that all I have to do math-wise is divide net operating income by price. I
sure.
select the calculator, okay?
Absolutely.
250,000 divided by 0.0775, let's say, 3.225 million. So there's an extra 325,000 plus in equity all of a sudden with the blend and extend. So maybe this seller doesn't want to deal with an asset that might go vacant, especially in a time where just 10, 14 days ago, Amazon announced officially they're going to be in the pharmacy space, right? So maybe they'll blend and extend it and sell it, you know, for 300K plus what it's worth right now, and they'll cash out, right? And further, you know, there's a lot of other reasons too. You know, you might have issues with financing. You know, people might want a 1031, you know, do an exchange into another property. There's also just opportunity. You know, there's times when, you know, if I can sell somebody's Taco Bell or Burger King at a 5.25 cap and they're willing to do a little bit more active investing or some value add and buy a shopping center for an 8.5 cap, that arbitrage is worth money to them.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If they can get a higher yield somewhere else, why not? Now that's interesting. So when it comes to the buyers, I mean, because obviously these are trading and maybe there is opportunity, you know, blend and extend is a kind of a backdoor version of value add almost.
It is. It's, you know, I'm a rehabber. I flipped a ton of houses. So I look at it as you're just rehabbing the lease.
Right. Yeah. And it's almost counterintuitive in the sense that you're dropping your NOI, but yet the time value of that lease becomes, that's like, kind of, it's kind of like trading commodities where it's like, oh, how much time value is built into this option? Like, okay.
Well, exactly. We've got time value. It's not even just about NOI today. It's about cash flow over the duration of the guaranteed lease. So now your cash flow over the duration of the guaranteed lease goes up huge, right? Because it's not 14 months at 290 a year, it's 10 years at 250 a year.
Right. And a lot of these places like Walgreens are signing, I mean, those are 10-year guaranteed leases, right?
No, so actually those are typically, it's interesting, they're usually like 50 or 99-year leases, but they're written differently. They have termination clauses. So after 20 years, there's a termination clause. Whereas most retailers will do like a 20-year lease with a 5-year option, they have like a 50-year lease with a termination clause after 20 years, which essentially means the same thing. Now, interestingly enough, I just got a video from my editor. I did a segment earlier this week because we sold a deal in Nevada, a Walgreens that had 9 years left on the lease. And a couple of days before closing, Walgreens reached out and said, hey, basically, parenthetically, we know this property is being sold. We're going to proactively cancel all of our options now. So that's going on across the country. So when you have a huge tenant like that, Walgreens is known for being very difficult to their landlords anyway, but they're flexing their muscles and saying, hey, we know that there's a new buyer here, a new owner. So I bet you they're going to decrease the rent on that store. And that's why proactively they said, we're canceling all our options, which is very odd. And I'm going to drop, you know, later today, this video where we analyze the site with one of my site selecting colleagues to show people why we think that Walgreens selected that store to cancel the options. And again, this is just another example. That's value add, right? I'm a broker that wants to teach people about why it's important to know about site selection and demographics and the mindset of major retailers. That there's way more to this than just slapping a cap rate on a property.
Right, right. And that's fascinating also. So they're essentially saying, hey guys, I don't care what this is trading for. We know when it trades for less that we can get a rent reduction by saying we're going to drop our options. Just tell you in advance. I don't care if it's 20 years from now, we're not going to renew.
Yeah, I think that what happened was they got the estoppel request. You know, there's an estoppel certificate request during, you know, due diligence that basically the tenant will sign saying, yeah, we're cool with the landlord, no issues. So when they got that request, they knew it was going to change hands. And when they knew it was going to change hands, they probably did an analysis and said, we've got another store 2.8 miles away that has better demographics and higher traffic counts and more people, higher population density. We're going to want to reduce the rent on this. And there's a new owner. Let's flex our muscles so that in 6 months or a year, we can come in, or even at the end of the 9 years, I don't know, and say, hey, we'll extend and do a new tool. We will come to you and offer a blend and extend opportunity.
Right, right. That's fascinating. Interesting. So how does an owner protect against that? Is there anything you as an owner of that underlying real estate can do?
Well, so as the new buyer, like let's say I was the buyer's broker, I would engage my colleague, right, like I did, and I'd make a video and analyze all the Walgreens in the area and say, well, this is the one I think is least likely to cancel their options. This is the one I think that is least likely to request a rental reduction. So again, that's why having a great broker is imperative, because I can flex my network and leverage my colleagues to do my research so that I can provide you, the buyer, the client, right, person getting advised, the best information possible to make an educated decision.
Right, man, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, because I've seen here, I'm based in Memphis, of course, but I've even seen them within, you know, they've been really close together, and you'll see one just close, actually I think two that I know of that have closed just packed up and left.
Here, I got one for you. Speaking of Memphis, I got a deal in Memphis, okay? I don't want to say too much about it because it's confidential, but
sure.
My client reached out to me and said, hey, Dan, I'm dealing with a major national tenant and I got 6 years left on my lease, but they want to work a deal out with me. They want to keep the rent the same for the next 11 years after the term is over and give me a new lease for 16 years. Or if I pay them $75,000, they'll give me rental bumps. What should I do? Guy had no idea. So I did some pretty simple math and some spreadsheets, and I came out with four different scenarios, right? Flat lease for 16 years, no change, current lease for 6 years, 16-year lease, 2% bump, 16-year lease, I think at 3%, and 16-year lease at 5% bumps. And at the end of the day, I showed how much more money he would be making with each option. And I clearly showed him that the tenant was, you know, jerking him around a little bit, because the $75,000 that they were requesting, he would have only gotten like $90,000 from that investment over 16 years.
Ooh.
So when I showed him that, and I showed him, well, hey, go for this option, he was actually able to secure a 16-year lease with better rent bumps for less money because he came to the table informed. The second they saw that spreadsheet, they knew that they weren't gonna, you know, pull the wool over his eyes. So that's a great way that a seller, in response to your question, that a seller can protect themselves. And that's through information. And if you don't, I've learned in this era, if I don't have information, you know what I do? I reach out to somebody who does. And that's what
I'm looking for. Right. Man, that's super smart. Yeah. Cause if you just do the time value of money calculations on that, I mean, it'll tell you quite a bit that 75 grand in today's money is, you know, 90 grand over 16 years is just, that's a bad investment. Yeah. I guess when it comes to sellers, what are people like? Let's talk about the buy side for a second. What are the cap rates that's kind of standard in your industry on these types of assets? And I guess we'll ask that and then ask secondly, are national tenants, what is kind of the mood in the market right now with the national tenants?
Yeah, good question. So cap rate variance is huge, right? You can take an asset like a Chick-fil-A, right? Or a really high producing McDonald's. We've been selling those in the 3 cap range, like the high threes, which is incredible,
whoa,
right? You could take maybe, you know, a high performing Wendy's or Burger King, Taco Bell, that'd be in the low 5 caps. I've got two right now that might sell in the high fours, which is crazy, right? Amazon distribution center, somewhere 4.5 to 5.25, 5.5. FedEx distribution center, 5.75, 6 caps, 6.25. Tire Kingdom or National Tire and Battery, you know, anything that's guaranteed by the TBC Corporation. And again, this is all depending on how much term is left, what the rent per square foot is, the demographics. I'm giving generalizations. Those type of assets, 5.5 cap to 6.5 cap. You know, obviously those are longer term leases. And then in the pharmacy space, I mean, you could have anything from a 5 cap to a 10 cap, depending on duration. And, you know, you look at the big three of RX, the CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens. I personally believe that Rite Aid is the worst position of the three. I think that CVS is probably the best because they own Aetna Health and they have MinuteClinics. Walgreens is probably in the middle because they have some of their own health services. And they just announced yesterday, I think, that they're rolling out another 60 locations with physical health services. Walgreens and CVS also manufacture some of their own medications. So they have that upper hand. But the pharmacy space is getting shooken up big time. You know what I mean? You look at the credit of Walgreens or of Rite Aid or CVS, it's not great credit. So, you know, that's just like a high level overview. If you want to look at multi-tenant shopping centers, you know, I sold a lot of shopping centers in Michigan right before the pandemic, anywhere from, you know, 6, 7, 5 cap up to 10, 11, 12 cap. Your typical, like, you know, strong, you know, suburban multi-tenant smaller shopping center, if it's a good deal, it's probably going to be in the 7.5 to 8.5 caps. So it all really depends. It has to be analyzed, has to be underwritten. But that's, I think, a general overview. In terms of the sentiment amongst the national tenants today, it's quite fascinating. You know, we're in a time period where historically we've never had something like this happen before, you know, and there was a lot of money that exchanged hands. There was a lot of talk of relief for tenants and for landlords. Some of that materialized, a lot of it didn't. What I've seen is that, you know, major corporations like TBC, despite the fact that they're an essential retailer, you know, the tire stores are essential and open for business, almost across the board, probably 95% of the locations that I have clients who own, they requested a rent abatement. They requested 3 months of rent abatement, and then they were going to pay it back by January of 2021. Look at Starbucks. They sent a letter out to every one of their owners saying we were going to reduce rents. And then lo and behold, 6 months later, they came out and said this was their best year ever and they're opening more stores next year, right? So there's a lot of national tenants that I think, I want to say this respectfully because this is my industry, but I think that they, you know, gamed the system a little bit and they said, oh, look, free money grabbed, trillions of dollars of money being printed and given away. Let's just step in. And unfortunately, you know, I'm an investor myself and I always look out for the small business owner and for the person that's building this country, right? This country was built by small business owners. And it's sustained by small business owners, I believe. So, you know, when you have a situation right now where owners are not able to collect rent, yet they have to pay their mortgages, you're creating a perfect storm for foreclosure, for loss of business and revenue. And I think that that is a real issue, especially as we end Q4 and start Q1. You know, I'm a net lease broker, but my background is in single and multifamily investing. And I find it very curious that the SBA had 6 months of loan deferral and abatement for, you know, people with SBA mortgages that expired September 27th. However, across the country right now, from a multi and single family residential perspective, you have the CDC that says that if you make $99,000 or less and you sign an affidavit saying that you had anything to do with COVID, you don't have to pay your rent till at least January. So look at it's incredible. It's almost a perfect storm, right? October, November, December, January, that's 4 months. So I look at it like from an opportunistic perspective. I was speaking with a broker this morning. I'm long multifamily in Q1, Q2, Q3 of 2021 because it's going to be a bloodbath because of what's going on. So I know I went off on a tangent there, but the general response to your question is that the sentiment varies. And I think it's very important as a broker and as an investor to look at the underlying fundamentals of the business that the national tenant runs. How are they doing? Are they going to be here in a year? Are they going to be here in 5 years? Are they going to go dark? And now it doesn't matter that you've got this great lease guarantee because the guarantor doesn't exist. Those are the questions you need to be asking yourself.
Right. That's brilliant. Let's jump into the final four here. If you were to give one piece of advice to anyone looking to invest in, you know, these types of leases and these types of investments, what would that one piece of advice be?
Find yourself a damn good broker and find yourself a great mentor and do whatever they say.
That's awesome. That's as succinct of an answer as you're going to get. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Well, I personally am part of the Next Level Mastermind, which is 18 professionals across the country. We have accountability groups. We build out seminars and webinars. We challenge each other. That helps me out tremendously. I also I'm constantly reading. I have a voracious appetite for you know, knowledge. And then I invest a tremendous amount of time in social media, in LinkedIn. Mm. And in, I have my own show. It's called Dan on Top of All Things Commercial Real Estate. And I believe that by investing and helping other people, bring people onto the show, you know, spotlighting them and highlighting them, I'm investing not only in them and in people in general, but also in myself.
Right. No, that's awesome. And when it comes to giving back, and you might have just answered this, because I think this might be your answer, but what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
So I believe my mission is to create jobs, to build small business, and to help save the economy. And I believe that I know that I'm doing that through, you know, hiring interns and junior brokers and training the next generation of commercial real estate brokers, because I personally believe that this is an incredibly lucrative field that, you know, allows me to help so many people. And I want other people to step out of the W-2, you know, false comfort and join us in this mission of growth and of success and of helping other people. Because ultimately in America, we have so many freedoms. And two of our greatest freedoms, in my opinion, are the ability to own our own property and the ability to own our own business. And commercial real estate affords you both of those. So I think that what I'm doing to give back right. is to open people's eyes and to help them. And to, like, literally, I don't hold anything back. My motto is provide value and everything else follows. So if somebody asks me to jump on a podcast, I jump on a podcast. If somebody asks me to underwrite a deal, even if I'm not going to get it, I underwrite the deal. If somebody wants advice or wants to hop on a call or needs something, I do my best to provide it, because I've been given so many things over the last, you know, couple decades. And there's nothing that makes me happier than helping other people get a job or become successful or learn or grow.
Right. Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
So I'm on LinkedIn. You know, I respond to every single message that I get. I should say that now. I don't know. I mean, I get a few hundred every day, but they can reach out to me, Dan Lukowicz, D-A-N, last name L-E-W-K-O-W-I-C-Z. Again, L-E-W-K-O-W-I-C-Z. My cell phone is 248-943-2838. Again, 248-943-2838. My show is Dan on Top. You can find us on Roku, on Amazon, on Apple TV, on Apple Podcast. My website, danontop.com, will be live in a few weeks. And yeah, if there's anything I can do to help, please reach out.
Dan, thanks so much for the time, man. I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. I'm glad that we connected.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.